Hi, I'm Melba Case. I was one of the 40 work campers coming from all over the United States and Canada in 1961 to be the first group of campers to come to Holden Village. The average age of the work campers was 20. A few were seniors in high school. Most were in college or university. Several were teachers, one a cement mason, one a social worker. It was amazing how each one's background of experience, interest, and skill contributed to the common good. In this slide is a picture of Liz Lindholm, who hosted a forum for our 25-year reunion. We met at Lake Chelan the evening before the trip up the lake. Gil told us about Holden, and we could hardly believe that all that was there looking at the bare hills of Chelan. Holden is a place apart. The only way you can get there is by boat on Lake Chelan, 1,500 feet deep, a 3.5-hour trip on the Lady of the Lake, and then 12 miles up the canyon by truck. Thus, it is a place apart where a person can unwind and see his life in a new perspective. There are no radios, no newspapers, no magazines, no TV. While we were there, there was no electricity, no hot water, no lights. I have never been anywhere from which, from the moment I arrived, I felt so completely apart from the world, and where I could so clearly see the world from which I had come and to which I would return. The village is magnificently located in the heart of some of the greatest wilderness in the world, 170 miles from Seattle and Spokane, equal distance from each. The Cascade Mountains, which surround the village, tower to heights of 7,000 to 10,000 feet. It is a region filled with glaciers, trout streams, and waterfalls, mighty forests, abundant mountain flowers, and deer and other wild game. There are many miles of hiking trails and unlimited opportunity for mountain climbing and horseback riding. The grandeur of the setting is unique. We were amazed to find Holden Village nestled in a narrow valley, surrounded by spectacular mountain peaks. Buckskin, Copper, and Dumbbell on the south, and Martin Ridge and Bonanza on the north. Our hearts were overjoyed by our first glimpse, and many eager adventurers found themselves exploring the village. There is something about the mountains, their size, their stability, their serenity, that makes you feel small and at the same time secure in the hands of God. Here is a picture of Chalet 2, which has since burned down. Main Street gives a glimpse of the mountains and their snow even in the summertime, a view of some of the two-story dormitory buildings seen at the right of Main Street. This was the hospital, which is now Agape. This is the old bridge that used to be there before a landslide came down one winter and took out the old bridge. The new bridge has replaced it. Here is a picture of the 40 work campers who first came to Holden Village in 1961. When we first arrived. This is a picture of us all dressed up, ready to go back to civilization at the end of 1 month. Gil Berg, a dedicated layman who is now the mayor of Holden Village and acting director, was in charge of the work projects. Bertha Pearson was our able cook. Zelda was her helper. All our food was cooked outside on the stove that's now in the museum, on a wood stove outside Chalet 1. Reuben Thompson and Bugger, the dog, was the custodian. He spent the first winter alone at Holden with Bugger. Dr. Wilton Bergstrand, youth director of the Augustana Lutheran Church, was the program coordinator working with the Work Campers Council. We had two nurses, Fern and Marie. This is the picture of the staff. On the left is Professor Laris of Pacific Lutheran University, who was the biologist. Next is Reuben, and then Gilberg, Dr. Bergstrand, and Bertha. The Forerunners, as we later decided to call ourselves, were organized into four groups of 10 members each. Each group was responsible for one of the four phases of the program. The teams were the devotional, recreational, cooking, and cleanup. We could easily see that there was much to be accomplished and that we could only perhaps put a dent in this great job. However, we all eagerly look forward to putting our shoulders to the giant wheel. Some of the boys went up on top the tailings and threw down pieces of wood that we could use that were on top of the tailings. Here's another picture of them throwing down the wood down toward Railroad Creek. In this place apart, we learn to be together. In peeling potatoes, washing dishes, washing clothes, raking, breaking a trail, cleaning, washing windows. In a thousand ways, especially in the company of sweat and dirty hands, the fellowship came alive and went very deep. The kitchen was and the dining hall was an incredible, well-nigh hopeless mess. In one place, we dug away impacted grease 4 inches thick, but finally the entire dining hall and all the equipment was gleaming clean. The last night, we held a banquet in the dining hall, which gave us great satisfaction. We did many new things, like learning to use a crosscut saw, clearing trails and breaking trails. This was up to Copper Falls. One day, Gil asked us to rake the road from Holden to Lucerne. That meant taking all the rocks and things off the road so that trip by the buses would be free of hazards. Sometimes the rocks were a little big, and there were easy ways of doing this job. Much cleaning took place during this time. Everything had to be wiped down because there was dirt everywhere. We used many, many rags. Here is another one gathering firewood. And the guys go a little faster at the crosscut saw than the girls. This was our mechanic, Jim Felton. He was one of the truck drivers also. Some extra work hours were given to completing special projects. For instance, the cement masons spent 12 to 14 hours a day laying the foundation for the power plant. Generators were barged up to Chelan, and the guys went down to Lucerne to help offload the generators and get them on the truck. Then they were brought up to Holden Village. And they had to be slid into place. This is the generator crew. Another big job was repairing the dining hall chimney. It had all fallen down when we got here. You had some great views working from the top of the chimney. Here is another picture of the scaffolding working on the chimney. Dolores Bergstrand cleaned up the barber shop and became the village barber. Little wonder that the number of the fellows passed up the joy of shaving with a Gillette in the ice-cold water and grew beards. For us girls, we had to find a way to take a bath. Often the stream was the best way, although it was pretty cold. We had no lights at all in the village until the last days, when a group with its offerings brought a little portable light plant, which we called the QP, Quad Peak Powerhouse. Then the fellows fixed up a couple of old wash machines to the fireplace back of the chalet and built a wood fire, heating the water and then stirring the wash with a stick and rubbing it out by hand. One gets a new appreciation for the automatic washer and dryer back home. The day's schedule was something like this. Morning devotions at 5:45 was followed by breakfast out of doors at 6. The first work period was from 6:30 to 9:30. After a snack break from 9:30 to 9:45, the second work period continued until 12:15. Dinner was at 12:30. The afternoon was for letter writing, meditating, clothes washing, hikes, team meetings, and Bible study cell leader briefings. At 4:30, Dr. Harold Laris of PLU, our naturalist for the month, led us nature study on the bird life, the geology, the animal life, the trees, and flowers of the area. Supper was at 5:30, and Bible study was from 7 to 8, at least an hour each day. Dr. Bergstrand led the Bible study, varying the method. We studied the life of John the Baptist and the book of Ephesians. This is how we came by the name of the Forerunners. One time we climbed up on Martin Ridge, all of us, to have a Bible study up on top of Martin Ridge. One evening, an engineer who had worked at the mine took us a mile into the mine. What a fascinating experience. The huge rooms, one finished off like a great arena, others as big as 5 football fields from which ore had been taken. We dropped a stone down one shaft, and it was 23 seconds before we heard it hit water. It said there's another 4 million ton of copper in Copper Mountain. The tracks are now being removed from the mine and the entrance will be blasted shut. Even the 3 great piles of brown tailings from the mine, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, 3/4 of a mile long and 1/4 of a mile wide and 100 feet or more high, are an impressive sight. This is the opening to the mine as we saw it. We were all... This is a building on the third level that evidently the snow had collapsed. One of the things that we were aware of was the danger of fires, and we have a fire chief. Our fire chief was John Hill. One day, he briefed the girls on the use of the fire equipment and later called a surprise drill. In 3.5 minutes, the girls had the hose laid out around house number 3 and had water pouring on a make-believe brush fire. Then the trouble began. In their enthusiasm, they ran the hose out too far for union with the first and had to back up. Liz Lindholm had failed to put the nozzle on correctly. And as a consequence, the water exploded all over everyone. Gil attempted to assist Liz and got a thorough soaking when the nozzle fell off. After 3 attempts to correct the situation, we learned that the nozzle just did not fit. The fellows from the men's team enjoyed the show very much and handed out much free advice as they photographed the humorous situation. When it was time for all of us to go home, we piled our clothes in the street, and some of them were totally worn out. And we had a clothes burning. The miners' village was there when we arrived. It was fun going through the miners' village. We found dishes still on the table and clothes on the line. This is a view of the miners' village as we saw it looking down from the third level. The next pictures are before and after pictures. 2 years later, all these houses were burnt by the Forest Service. And so we have some pictures showing before and after. This is one of the miners' houses with Bonanza in the background. This is afterwards. It's gone. This is one of the streets in the miners' village. This is after the houses were burned. We had some great overnight hikes. What a thrill to be hiking along a trail and have suddenly burst into view a mountain meadow or a snowfield or a series of waterfalls or a mountain lake or a snow-crowned peak. The hikes to Copper Creek Falls, to the top of Mountain Ridge, to Heart Lake, Lyman Lake, and Cloudy Pass, just to Hegan, the work campers will never forget. The early risers among the hikers prepared hot mush and thick slices of ham, which provided the necessary energy to conquer several thousand feet of brushy and snow-covered slopes. Our trail led us past Heart Lake, Crown Point Falls, and Lyman Lake, and finally our destination, Cloudy Pass. At this point, we appeased our appetites with ham sandwiches, dried prunes and raisins while seated in an alpine meadow where there were vistas of mighty peaks, which thrilled us greatly. A snowy hillside invited our interest, and soon skiing became a must to many. This was a new experience, especially on the 4th of July. The snowy slopes, which had taken 45 minutes to climb, took but a few minutes to descend. For some of us, Image Lake with Glacier Peak in the background was the culmination of our hiking. The last pictures are pictures of the village as it was in the winter when the miners were. Some of these slides were given to Gil and he gave them to us. To see Holden Village is to be convinced of its great possibilities. Here for once the seeing is greater than the anticipation. We have yet to meet a person who has been to the village who is negative or even neutral about it. All are enthusiastic. I will end this with a verse to How Great Thou Art that was written by Dr. Bergstrand on a hike that we went to Heart Lake where the three waterfalls come down and meet. He wrote this verse to the song and gave it to us when we arrived back in the village. And with it, when amid majestic snow-crowned mountains, far from the city's press and fret and stir, I heard the rumble of cascading fountains and walked neath skies of blue and stately fir. Then sings my soul, O mighty God, to thee, how great thou art, how great thou art.